Page 80. The trend toward the situation described in our model has been widely discussed during recent years. An extreme statement is that of EFM Durbin. Property in industrial capital has wholly lost the social function supposed to be grounded in it. It has ceased to be the reward for management, and it has largely ceased to serve as a reward for personal saving. Property in capital has become the functionless claim to a share in a product of industry. The institution is worse than indefensible. It is useless. Footnote 15. Text. The same phenomenon is criticized in the following comment. Emphasis of management today is not upon venture, upon chance-taking, as capitalism requires, but is upon price control, market division, avoidance of risk. This may be a good short-range policy, but if business isn't willing to take chances, somebody soon is going to ask why. It should enjoy profits. Why the management cannot be hired by government, which is called on to do all the chance-taking and might want to direct industry. Footnote 16. Text. This trend toward losing its social function as the private owner of capital has found its expression in the stockholders' loss of control over the management. It has culminated so far in the new German legislation on joint stock companies, in which the stockholders are deprived by law of any right to interfere with management. To sum up, under state capitalism, the status of the private capitalist is changed in a threefold way. 1. The entrepreneurial and the capitalist function, for example, direction of production and discretion in the investment of one's capital, are separated from each other. Management becomes virtually independent of capital without necessarily having an important share in corporate property. 2. The entrepreneurial and capitalist functions are interfered with or taken over by the government. 3. The capitalist, insofar as he or is not accepted as entrepreneur on the merits of his managerial qualifications, is reduced to a mere rentier. Here the question of incentive arises. In private capitalism, the decisive incentives for the capitalist to maintain, expand, and improve production are the profit interest and the permanent threat of economic collapse if the efforts should slacken. The non-capitalists are driven to cooperate efficiently by hunger and their desire for a better life and security. Under state capitalism, both groups lose essential parts of their incentive. What new devices will take over their most necessary functions? What will prevent stagnation and even regression in all spheres of state capitalistic society? In relation to the majority of the population, those who neither own nor command the means of production, the answer is simple. Page 81. The whip of unemployment is replaced by political terror, and the promise of material and ideological rewards continues to incite to the utmost personal efforts. The profit motive still plays an important role for capitalists and the managerial bureaucracy. Since large compensation is granted for efficient investment and management, personal initiative is freed from obstructing property interests and systematically encouraged. Footnote 17. Text. Within the controlling group, however, the will to political power becomes the center of motivation. Every decision is at bottom oriented to the goal of maintaining and expanding the power of the group as a whole and of each of its members. New industrial empires are being built and old ones expanded with this goal in mind. But we also have here the source of the principle that individual interests must always be subordinated to the common group interest. This principle, in turn, contributes decisively to strengthening governmental control, since only a strong government can integrate conflicting interests while serving the power interests of the whole group. Control of distribution. We have learned how to produce everything in practically unlimited quantities, but we don't know how to distribute the goods. This is the popular formulation to describe the riddle of private capitalism in its latest phase. Given a general plan and the political power to enforce it, state capitalism finds ample technical means for distributing everything that can be produced with the available resources. The main difficulty of private capitalism is eliminated by the fact that under state capitalism, the success of production does not necessarily depend upon finding buyers for the product at profitable prices in an unstable market, but is consciously directed towards satisfying public and private wants, which are to a large extent defined in advance. Adjustments which must be made as a result of technical errors in the general plan or unexpected behavior in consumer demands need not lead to losses for the individual producer and even less to economic disaster for him. Losses easily can be pooled by the administration. The means which are available for carrying over the necessary distributive function of a competitive market may be conveniently classified into direct allocation, priorities, quota, and so on, and administered prices. The former applies above all to the distribution of goods to producers. The latter refers mainly to the sphere of consumption. There is, however, no sharp dividing line between the fields of application of the two means. Footnote 18. Text. Labor is the outstanding example in which a combination of both methods is applied. Page 82. In construction, a rough model of the distributive mechanism under state capitalism, we always have to keep in mind that production and producers' consumption are two aspects of the same process. Since under modern conditions, producers and consumers are, as a rule, not the same person, distribution serves as a means of integrating them. The production plan is based on a comparatively arbitrary decision as to how much of the social product is to be available for consumption and how much is to be used for expansion. All major problems of distribution under state capitalism have been discussed thoroughly in the literature on socialist planning published within the last decade. Footnote 19. Text. While all writers in favor of a planned society agree that the tyranny of the market must be abolished, differences of opinion exist on the question of where to draw the limits for the use of a pseudo-market. Some writers recommend that the managers of the socialized industry should behave as if under competitive capitalism. They should play at competition. Footnote 20. Text. A model partly constructed on the results of this discussion may be used to illustrate how distribution works under state capitalism. The distribution of goods to producers starts from the following situation. 1. Most productive facilities are privately owned but controlled by the government. 2. Each industry is organized in cartels. 3. Prices react to changes in supply and demand, as well as to changes in the cost structure within the limits permitted by the plan, authority, and the monopolies. 4. A general plan for the structure of the social product is in existence. Under these circumstances, a system of priorities and quotas will guarantee the execution of the plan in its broad lines. These allocations cover reproduction of existing resources, expansion, including defense, and the total output of consumer goods, which every industry shall produce. Within each industry, a quota system will provide for the distribution according to a more detailed plan or according to expressions of consumer choice. Not much room is left in this setup for flexible prices. The partial survival of the profit motive will induce manufacturers who are offered higher prices for their products to bid up in turn the prices of their factors. But the Office of Price Control will not permit prices to go higher than is compatible with the general plan. Since all major units of production are under control of cartels, the propensity to keep prices flexible should not be overestimated. Page 83. Governmental control will be immensely facilitated by the enormous role of public works necessary to maintain full employment under all circumstances. Full employment in the strict sense of the word can be achieved in regard to labor only. Due to technological facts, it is not possible in the case of plant and equipment. New plant and new machinery constructed according to the latest technical development require a minimum size of plant, which as a rule leads to temporary overcapacity at the moment of their completion. If no ways for using this overcapacity can be found speedily, some idleness of capital will arise. This might happen with entire durable goods industries, for example, machine tools. If the need for their product is temporarily saturated, neither this nor other maladjustments can produce the culminative effect so vicious under the free market system. Footnote 21. Text. For the capital owner might be compensated for the loss of the pooled profits or public sources, and provisions for a constant reserve in planning the labor supply will take care of the displaced workers. Technological unemployment will be handled in a similar way. It has been shown that the opposite case, periodical shortage of capital, can be avoided in a planned society. Footnote 22. Text. Labor under state capitalism is allocated to the different sections of production like other resources. This does not prevent the planning authorities from differentiating wages. On the contrary, premiums in the form of higher real wages can be granted whenever extra efforts are demanded. The slave driver's whip is no workable means for extracting quality products from highly skilled workers who use expensive machinery. This differentiation in wage schedule, however, is not the outcome of market conditions, but of the wage administrator's decision. No entrepreneur is allowed to pay higher wages than those fixed by this agency. With absolute control of wages, the government is in a position to handle the distribution of consumer goods with a comparative ease. In case of severe scarcity, as in wartime, direct allocation of consumer goods might be the only adequate means of their distribution. In such a case, consumer choice is very limited, but not entirely ruled out. Footnote 23. Text. If, however, a somewhat more adequate supply of consumer goods is available, the consumer may be as free or with the greater purchasing power created by full employment, even more free in his choice under state capitalism than he is now. In order to achieve this goal with the means now at hand, a pseudo market for consumer goods will be established. Page 84. The starting point for its operation is a clearly defined relation between the purchasing power, which will be sent for consumption, and the sum of prices of all available consumer goods. Both sums must be equal. In other words, the total income paid out to consumers minus taxes, compulsory and voluntary savings must be the same as the price